Wherever Mitch Thorne was, Harley and Baloo were usually close by. Those two had a hold of Sandy. Harley held the young man's arms, and Baloo stood in front of him and hammered punches into Sandy's midsection.
Beat the damn thing to death! Tried to molest Mr. Gerard!
No, that's not what happened!
Shut up, you little slut! I know damn good and well what was going on here. The rest of the town doesn't have to. We'll kill that bastard, and nobody else will have to know that you were degrading yourself with the filthy redskin.
Smoke drew his other Colt and eared back the hammers on both guns.
The only ones who are going to die here are you and your friends if you don't let those folks go, Thorne.
It's West!
Baloo turned to face Smoke. The cuts and scratches on his face came into view, as did the blood-stained bandage wrapped around his upper left arm. Thorne turned hurriedly, hanging on to Robin so that she had to come with him. That put her between him and Smoke.
It takes a mighty yellow son of a bitch to hide behind a woman.
You just don't know how to keep from sticking your nose into things that are none of your business, do you, West? What is it? You want this tramp for yourself now that the Indian's through with her?
I'm gonna take particular pleasure in killing you, Thorne.
How you gonna do that? I can't draw on you. You ruined my gun arm, remember? The only way you can kill me is by murdering me, and you'll hang for that.
Gerard's little tin badge of a marshal won't ever arrest me.
No? You gonna kill him too? You won't spend the rest of your life looking over your shoulder while every lawman in the West hunts you? Because that's what'll happen once word gets around that you gunned down a peace officer. The rest of the Star Packers won't know what really happened here. They'll just know that Buck West murdered a fellow lawman.
Let Miss Gerard go. Your grudge is with me, not her or Sandy.
Hell, it is! I've been after this tramp for months to marry me, or at least let me court her, but she always says no. But then I come in here this morning, and I find her letting that dirty Indian put his hands all over her. No, sir! She owes me. She's gonna pay up.
She doesn't owe you a damn thing.
Thorne back toward the front door, dragging Robin with him. Harley still had hold of Sandy, and he was using him as a human shield. And Baloo was staying behind both of them with his gun drawn.
Earl! Get the horses! We're getting out of here!
Baloo was closest to the door. He ducked out through it. Smoke still wasn't able to get a shot.
You want her? You have to come after her, West. We'll be ready for you this time. You won't ride away, you bastard.
Not until I've killed all three of you.
Big talk for a man who doesn't hold any cards.
Suddenly, Thorne lunged backward through the doorway, taking Robin with him. Harley leaped after Thorne and Robin, prodding Sandy in front of him. Smoke raced along the aisle after him. Baloo popped in the doorway. Smoke raised his pistol. Baloo jerked under the impact of the lead and staggered to the side. He managed to stay on his feet, though, and emptied the revolver at Smoke. Baloo ran back outside. Smoke scrambled up and went after him. He reached the door in time to see that Thorne and Harley were already in the saddle. Since Thorne had only one good arm, Robin sat on the back of Harley's horse in front of him. He had an arm wrapped around her waist. Baloo, wounded again, was trying to climb onto his horse.
Kill the redskin!
The gun in Harley's free hand came up. Blood flew in the air from Sandy's head as the bullet smashed into it. Smoke tried to fire at Thorne, but Baloo got in the way. Thorne and Harley galloped off to the north as Smoke leveled his guns at him. He grimaced as he realized the horse's initial burst had already put him out of handgun range, but he didn't think they could outrun seven. The Appaloosa had speed and stamina to spare. Smoke holstered his Colts and turned, intending to run behind the building to the shed and throw his saddle on Seven. Smoke had seen the young man shot in the head, and he assumed he was dead. Sandy was still alive, but he might not be for very long without help. Smoke ran to Sandy's side and dropped to his knees to see what he could do for the wounded young man. Smoke took hold of Sandy's chin and turned the young man's head so that he could see the wound. Blood covered the whole right side of Sandy's face. But when Smoke parted the thick, dark hair above the ear, He saw that the slug had torn a gash in the scalp instead of penetrating. The shots had drawn some attention in town, even at that early hour. Smoke heard heavy footsteps hurrying toward him, and when he looked up, he saw Marshal Calhoun about 20 feet away, shotgun in hand.
You killed him!
Before Calhoun could do any more than start to make his move, the Colt in Smoke's right hand snapped up. Ah! The .44 slug ripped through Calhoun's right arm. He dropped the shotgun and staggered back a step as he clapped his left hand over the wound. His face contorted with hate as he let go of his right arm and tried to make an awkward grab for his holstered pistol with his left hand.
Don't do it, Marshal. I don't want to kill you.
You can't get away with this. Damn it, you shot me.
I figure that was better than letting you splatter me all over with that greener. Anyway, if you'd cut loose at me, you'd have killed Sandy here, too.
The Indian? He ain't dead. He's got blood all over his face.
He's just creased and knocked out. Now Baloo over there is dead.
I suppose you didn't kill him either.
Actually, I did. It was sort of an accident, though. I was trying to kill Mitch Thorne, and Baloo's head got in the way of my slug. Those other wounds are from when he tried to kill me last night and again this morning.
Why were you trying to kill Thorne?
To stop him and Gus Harley from kidnapping Miss Garrard.
Miss Garrard? The school teacher? Mr. Garrard's daughter?
That's right. They threw her on Harley's horse and took off with her, heading north.
Son of a bitch! When Garrard hears about this, that...
Several of the townspeople had come up behind Calhoun. One of them turned and took off at a run, obviously going to spread the news of Robin's kidnapping.
All hell's gonna break loose now. You better tell me what happened here, Wes.
Save it for when Garrard gets here. Right now, this young fella needs a doctor.
The Redskin?
Where's the doctor's office?
Pick him up and bring him along. I'll show you. Gotta go there myself to have the sawbones see about this arm of mine you ventilated.
You wouldn't have gotten hurt if you hadn't lost your head, Marshal.
Smoke holstered his Colts and bent to slip his arms around the still unconscious Sandy. He lifted the young man without much effort. Because he didn't trust Calhoun, he kept a close eye on the lawman as Calhoun led him along the main street. He took him to a neat cottage with a sign out front indicating that Dr. Peter Neal practiced medicine there. Dr. Neal was a slender man in late middle age, with a shock of white hair and spectacles that perched on the end of a long nose. He checked both wounds quickly once Smoke had carried Sandy into a surgery, and Calhoun followed along behind.
The head wound is slightly more serious, so I'll treat it first. You'll have to wait your turn, Marshal. Try not to bleed too much on my floor.
God dang, Redskin's getting better treatment than me.
Jason Garrard burst in a couple of minutes later when Neal was cleaning the wound on Sandy's scalp.
Someone told me you'd come in here. What's this about Thorne carrying off my daughter?
Reckon it's true, Mr. Garrard. West there can tell you about it.
You? What's your part in this, West?
I just happened to be there at the school early this morning when Thorne, Harley, and Baloo burst in and attacked Sandy.
Who?
The Redskin.
What was he doing there with my daughter?
I imagine he was kissing her. From the way Thorne was so upset about it.
Why, the damn dirty savage! I'll see that he hangs for molesting Robin!
He didn't molest her, you damn fool. The two of them are in love, and I reckon they've been for a while. That's one reason Sandy was going back east for a white man's education, so he'd feel worthy of marrying Miss Garrard.
Marrying? That Indian wanted to marry my daughter?
And she wanted to marry him. In fact, she said she would go and live in the Crow Village with him if that's what he wanted.
That's a lie!
I'll let you get away with calling me a liar, Garrard. Once. What I just told you is the truth, and you damn well better get used to it.
What about Thorne?
He wanted to marry Miss Garrard, too. But she wasn't interested.
I would never let her marry a cheap gunman, either!
I don't know what the three of them were doing at the school so early. Maybe Thorne knew that Miss Garrard showed up there early to get ready for the day and wanted to see her. But they caught her and Sandy together, and Thorne went loco. He told Harley and Baloo to beat Sandy to death. There's no telling what he had in mind for your daughter, Garrard. But when I took a hand, he made her a hostage and dragged her out with him. Harley shot Sandy, I shot Baloo, and Thorne and Harley got away with Miss Garrard. That's the whole story.
How'd the marshal get shot?
I did that in self-defense, because he was about to cut loose at me with that shotgun without finding out what was going on first.
So you admit to shooting a lawman? You'll go to prison for that, West.
Maybe you better think twice about that, Mr. Gerard. With this bullet hole in my arm, I ain't gonna be in any shape to go after Thorne and Harley.
Are you suggesting that I turn to this gunfighter for help?
West might be the only one in these parts who can handle Thorne and Harley. Even wounded like he is, I reckon Miss Thorne's as dangerous as a cougar, and he's got Miss Gerard as a hostage to boot.
I can't believe I'm doing this. But how about it, West? Will you go after those bastards and get my daughter back? I'll pay any price you ask.
I told you once before what you could do with your job offers, Gerard.
Damn it, West, don't...
I'll go after them. But not because you asked me to. You don't know it, but I met Miss Gerard last night. She heard that ruckus at the livery barn and offered me a place to stay. I slept in the shed behind the school last night. That's how come I was there this morning when the trouble started.
Sometimes robbing medals and things that are none of her business. But I guess all that really matters is that somebody is going after her.
I'll come with you once I get this wound bandaged up, West. I can deputize it, and since the kidnapping took place here in town, that'll make it legal for us to go after Thorne and Harley.
All right. Providing the doc here can get you patched up pretty quickly so we can get started trailing them.
I'm almost finished with the young man. I've cleaned his wound and checked for damage to the skull. There doesn't seem to be any. I'll put a dressing on there, and then I can tend to Marshal Calhoun.
What can I do to help? You need guns, ammunition, any other supplies? Anything Hammond has in his store, I'll buy it.
How about you promise to leave Hammond alone and not try to put him out of business?
You can't dictate to a man how he's supposed to do business.
You can if you're planning to risk your life to rescue his daughter from outlaws.
It's a deal. Bring Robin back safely to me and I won't open a store to compete with Hammond. You have my word on it.
A quarter of an hour later, Smoke and Calhoun rode to the schoolhouse to pick up the trail.
That engine woke up while the doc was tending to my arm. When he found out that Thorne and Harley carried off Miss Gerard, it was all the doc could do to hold him down. He wanted to come with us. Doc said that it'd be too dangerous for him with a head wound like that. Give the Redskins something to make him sleep.
Yeah, that was probably best. We don't need a wounded man to look after any more than we need a posse tagging along.
Yeah, you're right about that. You ought to be able to handle two men, especially when one of them's wounded. You're pretty slick when it comes to handling a gun, ain't you, West?
I'm still here.
Yeah, that's sort of what you have to go by, ain't it? You know, West, I'm sorry we got off on the wrong foot the way we did. You may not believe it, but it's important to me that I keep the peace in my town. I've been around long enough to know trouble when I see it. And mister, you got it writ all over you.
I don't go looking for trouble.
You don't back away from it when it comes calling, though, do you?
The good Lord didn't put much backup in me when he made me.
See, that's what I mean. I took one look at you and knew things would be more peaceful in Buffalo Flat if you just kept riding.
More peaceful for Jason Gerard, you mean?
Mr. Gerard is the most important man in town. I won't apologize for looking out for his interests. The more successful he is, the better off a town is.
That's one way of looking at it. Other folks might not see it that way.
They had reached the school. Earl Ballou's body was gone, having been carted away by the local undertaker. Smoke swung down from the saddle and hunkered on his heels to study the hoof prints on the ground in front of the building.
They were headed north when they left here. Got any idea where they could be headed in that direction?
Nope, but if they curved west, that'd put them in the Bighorns. And there are plenty of places to hide up there.
The Crow Village is in that direction, isn't it? And Bannerman's Ranch.
Yeah, but they could avoid those places easy enough. It's a big mountain range.
We'll be pushing pretty hard. You'll have to keep up, wounded arm or no wounded arm.
You just do what you have to do, West. I'll stick, don't you worry.
You never did deputize me.
Nope, I sure didn't. Forgot all about it. You swear to uphold the law?
I do.
Then I hereby appoint you a deputy marshal of Buffalo Flat, Wyoming Territory. That good enough, you reckon?
It'll do.
Calhoun hadn't been certain that Thorne and Harley would head for the mountains, just suggested the possibility. But it turned out to be true. The farther away he and Smoke got from town, the more the trail they were following angled toward the Bighorns. Smoke thought they had narrowed down the lead somewhat, but their quarry was still quite a ways in front of them. Smoke glanced narrow-eyed at the foothills looming closer.
We won't be able to stop them before they reach the mountains.
Will you be able to find them once we get there?
Do my best.
I sure don't want to go back to town and have to tell Mr. Gerard we couldn't find his gal.
I don't want that either. Although I don't give a damn about Gerard. Miss Robin struck me as a mighty nice woman.
She is. For the life of me, I can't see somebody like her mixed up with a dirty Injun. Half-breed at that. I heard tell old Crazy Bear's squaw is a gypsy woman.
They reached the foothills around mid-afternoon and started climbing. Smoke's keen eyes were able to pick up enough signs so they didn't lose the trail. But following it was becoming more difficult. Thorne and Harley hadn't been trying to conceal their tracks. They'd been interested in putting as much distance as possible between them and the settlement. Smoke could tell that had changed now, and they were trying to throw off any pursuit. Late that afternoon, the hoof prints merged with the tracks left by half a dozen more horses. Smoke reined in and pointed them out to Calhoun.
An Indian war party, maybe?
No, those mounts were shod. They weren't Indian ponies. From the looks of it, Thorne and Harley joined up with them on purpose.
Who could that other bunch be? And how'd Thorne know they were up here so he could rendezvous with them?
I don't know. I reckon the odds against us have just gone up.
Maybe we should have brought that posse with us after all.
No, it's better this way. The others might have blundered into a trap if we'd brought them with us.
Smoke didn't have any trouble following them until the sun dipped behind the mountains and dusk began to settle down over the rugged terrain.
We'll have to wait until morning to pick up the trail then.
They'll have the whole night to gain on us.
No, they won't. They'll have to stop and camp for the night. It's too big a risk to go blundering around in these mountains after dark. You might fall into a ravine or something like that.
I hope you're right, West.
Smoke found a place to camp in a small depression.
Need me to change the dressing on that arm?
You do that?
I put the hole there. I might as well tend to it.
I'd be obliged. Doc Neal told me I needed to change it at least once a day, and I hadn't quite figured out how I was going to do that. I can fire a gun just fine with my left hand, but it ain't much good for little stuff.
Smoke had noticed Calhoun had replaced his regular holster with a cross-draw rig that he still wore on his right side so he could use his left hand to draw the gun.
Where'd you get the holster?
Hell, I got a whole drawer full of different kinds of holsters in the office. When Buffalo Flat first got started, it was rough as a cob for a few months. Hombres would get themselves in gunfights and wind up dead. And whatever was left over from their gear that the undertaker didn't claim for planting them usually wound up being confiscated by the marshal. That'd be me.
Calhoun was different from most lawmen he'd run into. He almost seemed to take pride in his low-level corruption.
You don't think much of me, do you?
I think the citizens of Buffalo Flat could find themselves a better marshal.
Really? Did you see how fast the town was growing? Did you hear any commotion from the saloons last night?
No, but I was up at the school. I might not have been able to hear it.
There was nothing to hear. Even Bannerman's wild Texas cowboys behaved themselves when they were in town, and that's because of me, West. They know I won't stand for any foolishness.
Except from Gerard's men.
I told you, Gerard is the biggest man in these parts. If it wasn't for him, the town wouldn't have enough money to pay my wages. Damn right I'm going to look out for him and his men. Oh, hell, forget it. You and me ain't ever going to see eye to eye on anything except wanting to get Miss Robin back safe and sound. Let's let it go at that.
Sounds good to me. Would you rather stand first watch or second?
Second's fine by me.
With that settled, Calhoun turned in, rolling up in his blankets. Smoke sat down with his back against a rock and his rifle across his knee. A few hours had passed when Smoke heard a small noise somewhere near the camp. Smoke came to his feet, his fingers curled around the trigger of his rifle. Convinced it was a person, not an animal, he waited, motionless, as whoever it was approached. A shadowy shape loomed up in the darkness and stepped past him. The intruder didn't even know he was there, Smoke realized. Moving once again, he set the rifle on the ground at his feet, then drew his right hand Colt. He stepped forward, looped his left arm around the intruder's neck, and jerked him backward. At the same time, he pressed the revolver's barrel against the side of the man's head.
No! Sandy, what blazes are you doing here?
Smoke's voice awakened Calhoun. The marshal thrashed from his blankets and reached for his gun.
What the hell?
Take it easy, Calhoun. You don't need to draw.
Smoke let go of Sandy and stepped back.
We've got an unexpected visitor, that's all.
You didn't have to try to choke me.
You're lucky I didn't wallop you with my gun. On top of that bullet graze, it might have been too much even for that thick skull of yours. How'd you manage to follow us out here?
I'm a Crow warrior, remember? Well, half of one, anyway. My father taught me how to follow a trail when I was young. Plus, I had a pretty good idea Thorn and Harley would head for the mountains. When I got close enough, I just followed the smell of the coffee. I didn't know if I was closing in on your camp or that of Thorn and Harley.
If it had been their camp, you would have walked right in there and gotten yourself killed. That would have done Robin a whole heap of good.
You don't understand. I love her. I'd run any risk for her.
Those two bastards have joined up with another group. Now, I don't know who they are, but the odds went up by half a dozen.
Not exactly. I'm here to help now.
I don't think it's going to make that much difference. You're wounded.
So is Marshal Calhoun. I can handle a gun. A rifle, anyway. I've never been much good with a pistol.
Kid's got a point. I don't care much for Redskins, but he'd be an extra gun. You did bring a gun with the engine?
It's on my horse. I left it tied to a bush a couple hundred yards east of here.
What good was a rifle going to do you if it's back there? Go get it. We can't take you all the way back to Buffalo Flat, and I don't want you wandering around out here by yourself. That might wind up causing us more trouble. I reckon you'll ride with us, but you'll have to keep up.
Of course. I'll fetch my horse.
Sandor came back a few minutes later, leading the animal.
Did you bring any supplies with you?
Well, no. I left the settlement in such a hurry after slipping out of Dr. Neal's house, I didn't think about it.
How'd you get out anyway? I saw the doc give you something to put you to sleep.
The powder he mixed up in water didn't work. It must have been old and lost some of its potency. It made me a little drowsy for a while, then wore off. When he stepped out of the room, I left through the window. I have quite a headache, but that's all. It's nothing compared to Robin's safety.
Sandy hadn't brought a bedroll with him. It wasn't too cold at that time of year, but in the mountains, the night air always held a chill. Smoke loaned the young man an extra blanket. Sandy rolled up in it and soon went to sleep. Calhoun turned in again, too. The rest of Smoke's watch was uneventful. When he judged by the stars that the night was a little more than half over, he nudged Calhoun's shoulder with the rifle barrel.
Wake up, Marshal. Your turn to stand guard.
I'm awake.
Calhoun threw his blankets aside and climbed to his feet. He sat down on the rock where Smoke had been leaning earlier.
If you hear anything, don't hesitate to wake me.
Sure.
Smoke slipped into his bedroll and placed a Henry on the ground close beside him. Using his saddle for a pillow, he lay there with his eyes slitted for a while, watching Calhoun. He didn't know that lawman well enough to trust that he would stay awake. But Smoke wasn't relying totally on Calhoun. If anyone came lurking around, Seven would notice and make a racket. That Appaloosa was a good sentry. Half an hour later, Calhoun was still alert, looking around and standing up from time to time to roll his shoulders and shake his head. Smoke had to have some rest, so he chanced closing his eyes. Seven brought Smoke out of his slumber some time later. A glance at the eastern sky showed him the black night had faded to gray. He looked toward the rock. Calhoun had slid down it and sat on the ground. Slumped against it now, he was sound asleep. Smoke reached for his rifle.
Go ahead. I'd like nothing better than to blow you all to hell and gone.
Without turning his head, Smoke cut his eyes toward the voice. In the dim pre-dawn light, he saw Thorne's booted feet about 5 feet away. Smoke's gaze traveled up Thorne's legs to the man's body. Thorne had his wounded right arm under the twin barrels of a shotgun, bracing it while he gripped the stock with his left hand. More men moved in from the chilly gloom. A couple covered Sandy, while one man reached down and plucked the revolver from the cross-draw rig worn by Marshal Calhoun. The lawman lunged up, but one of the intruders planted a boot in his chest and shoved him back against the rock.
Stay put, mister. Nobody will get hurt as long as you cooperate.
The voices woke Sandy. The young man started to sit up, then reacted with shock as he saw the men pointing their guns at him.
Now that we got you boys' attention, listen up. This is how it's gonna be. We're gonna take your horses, your guns, and all your supplies.
And then leave us out here? Hell, we'll never make it!
Well, then maybe we should just go ahead and kill you right now.
Take it easy. You've got the upper hand, Thorn, so keep talking.
There's not much more to say. I told you the deal.
There's more to it than that. Who are these other hombres? How'd you come to meet up with them? How did you find us?
Yeah, I might as well indulge your curiosity, I suppose. That last question is the easiest. I figured you were stubborn enough to come after us, West, so we sent a man circling around to keep an eye on our back trail. He spotted you, and when he knew where you'd camped, he came and told us. Yeah, it was just a matter of waiting for that lump of lard who calls himself a marshal to fall asleep. I knew he wouldn't be able to stay awake.
You got no call to be talking about me like that. I covered up for you and Harley and Baloo a whole heap of times, Thorn, and kept you out of trouble when most star packers would have thrown you behind bars.
And you were well paid for it, too. You were never a real lawman. You just Gerard's lapdog.
Same thing's true of you.
Not hardly. I always had my own plans. Gerard just didn't know about them. That's why I sent for these fellas and had them wait up here in the hills for me until the time was right.
You were going to double-cross Gerard. Raid the town and loot it.
Nope, you're wrong, West. I could only do something like that once. But Gerard's making money hand over fist, and it's been piling up in the safe in his office. But he plans to ship it back to the bank in Casper for much longer, because there isn't a bank in Buffalo Flat yet.
Your gang was going to hit the stagecoach when Gerard's money was on it.
That's right. They'd make it look good, too. Before I drove them away and saved the money... Gerard would have been so grateful to me for saving his money that he'd convince Robin to marry me.
She would never marry you, you...
Shut up, you jabbering redskin! She wouldn't have had much choice in the matter. After all, I'd be the man who saved her father from being ruined.
Then once you were married to her, Gerard would have had some sort of fatal accident, leaving you in charge of the whole town.
That's right. Oh, he'd have bled it dry, too. And left there as rich man! You and this filthy Indian ruined all that, West. Now it'll never happen.
You mean you ruined it for yourself when you lost your head yesterday morning?
Well, what the hell would you do if you walked in and found a woman you love being pawed by a dirty breed?
You didn't count on falling in love with her, did you, Thorn? She was just supposed to be part of the plan, a means to an end. Now you've risked everything because you fell in love with her.
Shut up! Just shut up, West! Gah! I've changed my mind. We're not gonna let you bastards live. The only way we can salvage anything is by looting the town, the way you said. And I'd just as soon not have you behind me somewhere while I'm doing that.
So you're going to kill us?
That's the new plan.
Where's Robin?
Oh, don't worry about her. She's close by. I got a man keeping an eye on her.
You'll have to kill her too, you know.
No! No! She'll come with us. She'll understand it's the only thing she can do. Might take her a while, but she'll come around.
Why don't you bring her in? At least let her say goodbye to Sandy here.
Why the hell would I want to do that? Let this redskin slobber on her some more? I don't think so.
The sun wasn't quite up, but it was high enough so that reddish gold light flooded the sky. Smoke looked around, his eyes searching intently over the hills that surrounded the campsite. He smiled again.
It's a beautiful morning. A good day to die.
Yeah, that's one way for you to look at it.
Nope, not me. You're the one who's going to die, Thorn.
We'll see about that.
One of the men covering Sandy dropped his gun so he could use both hands to paw at the shaft of the arrow that seemed to have sprouted like magic from his throat. The man with him whirled around, and as he did so, another arrow drove deep into his side. Thorn's head jerked in their direction, and as it did, Smoke rolled the other way as fast as he could. At the same time, Calhoun threw himself into a diving tackle at the legs of the man guarding him. Smoke came up on his feet and leaped out of the way. Sandy lunged forward as Thorn passed him. His arms went around the outlaw's legs and he brought him down.
You son of a bitch!
Gus Harley's weight barreled into Smoke and knocked him backward. Smoke landed on the rock where Calhoun had been sitting earlier. Before he could wallop Harley with a Colt, the man's weight suddenly vanished. Smoke looked on in amazement as the biggest Indian he had ever seen in his life lifted Harley into the air. Smoke knew he was looking at the legendary Crazy Bear, Sandy's father, chief of the Crow. And the man Smoke had spotted sneaking up on the camp a few minutes earlier, prompting his comment to Thorn about it being a good day to die. Crazy Bear hurled Harley to the ground with incredible force. Smoke straightened and whipped up his left-hand gun. The outlaw standing behind Crazy Bear and drawing a bead on the Crow chief fell over, dead. Calhoun had gotten the upper hand over the man he was wrestling with. Marshall was on top of his opponent, hammering his left fist into the man's face again and again. When he looked up toward the spot where Sandy and Thorn had been struggling, he realized that Thorn was gone. Sandy lay curled up on the ground.
He got away from me. He'll go after Robin.
Smoke glanced around. There was one other outlaw unaccounted for, as well as the man Thorn had left guarding Robin. That made three of the enemy still on the loose.
Don't worry. I'll find her and bring her back.
A huge hand closed on Smoke's shoulder.
My son, is he all right?
Yeah. He's not hurt any worse than he was before. He was just too weak to stop Thorn from getting away.
Then come. You and I will follow those men.
Smoke glanced around and saw that Calhoun had knocked his man out. He staggered to his feet.
Marshall, keep an eye on Sandy.
Yeah, go get Thorn.
This way.
They ran up the wooded slope. Smoke figured the man guarding Robin had the horses with him. If Thorn and the others got away with her, Smoke would have to chase them down again. He didn't want that. Instinctively, Smoke fired back, blasting out shots from both .44s. The man who had fled with Thorn reeled from the bushes where he had hidden to ambush him and collapsed as blood welled from the bullet holes in his chest. Crazy Bear bounded ahead, his great bulk clearing a path through the brush. Smoke couldn't even keep up. He ran past the man he'd killed and hurried along as best he could. Through a gap in the growth that the massive warrior had left behind him, Smoke caught a glimpse of horses moving around in the clearing, and he knew they had reached the spot where Thorn had left Robin. Crazy Bear never slowed down. Smoke ran into the clearing in time to see him lift the outlaw guarding Robin into the air by his neck. Crazy Bear shook the guard like a dog shaking a rat. Smoke twisted to see Thorn standing over Robin, aiming the sawed-off shotgun one-handed at Crazy Bear's back. The slugs drove into Thorn's chest and knocked him back a step. The scattergun drooped in his hand. Then Thorn steeled himself with a visible effort and swung the shotgun toward Robin. Sandy rushed out of the brush. He lunged forward, grabbing Thorn's wrist and twisting the barrels up towards Thorn. When Thorn's body thudded to the ground among the spooked horses, there was nothing left above his shoulders but a bloody stump of a neck. Sandy bent and grabbed hold of Robin, lifting her from the ground and pulling her into a desperately tight embrace.
Robin, are you all right?
I'm fine. Sandy, you're alive. It's impossible. I saw Harley shoot you.
He just grazed me. We're alive, Robin. We're both alive.
Calhoun came up behind Smoke.
Couldn't keep the kid from chasing after you. Looks like it's all over.
Yeah, until we get back to Buffalo Flat anyway.
As they were riding toward the settlement later, having left the bodies of Thorn and his men for the buzzards and the wolves, Calhoun brought his horse alongside Smoke's and nodded toward Crazy Bear, who was riding well ahead of the others.
I saw you talking to that big old engine earlier. You asked him how he managed to find us and show up like he did?
He followed Sandy.
The kid?
Yeah. One of the men from the Crow Village was in town yesterday morning when all the ruckus happened.
Is that right? Well, they come into town every now and then to pick up shells for the rifles at Hammond's store. Folks don't like having them around much. They're naturally a mite scared of the Redskins, after all. But the Crows and the Whites get along pretty good most of the time. Some of them even scout for the army.
You're not telling me anything I don't already know. Anyway, this fellow heard that Sandy had been hurt and hustled back up to the Crow Village to tell Crazy Bear, who headed for town to see about his son. On the way there, he spotted Sandy trailing us and decided to tag along after him. He figured that Sandy was going after Thorn to try to rescue Robin, so he came along to lend a hand if he needed to. And of course, he wound up saving our bacon, or helping to anyway.
Calhoun shook his head and looked back over his shoulder at Sandy and Robin, who were riding side by side about 20 yards behind him.
Mr. Gerard's gonna be damn glad to get his daughter back safe and sound, but he ain't gonna like the gal being sweet on that boy.
He may have to get used to it. Some things a man can't do much about.
It was late afternoon when they rode into the settlement. Smoke led the way to Gerard's office, and by the time they got there, quite a crowd had gathered around them. Jason Gerard was waiting in the doorway, a huge smile on his face. As Robin reined in, he rushed forward to help her dismount. Then he pulled her into his arms and hugged her tightly.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, thanks to Sandy and his father.
The Indians?
And Mr. West and Marshal Calhoun, too, of course. They all risked their lives to save me.
That ain't all we saved, Mr. Gerard. Mitch Thorn was playing us all for fools. He was gonna marry your daughter, murder you, and take over the whole town.
How in the world do you know that?
Thorn admitted the whole thing when he thought he was about to kill us.
The Marshal's right. He said the same things to me when he was gloating about his plans. Of course, they were all ruined as soon as he lost his head and kidnapped me.
I don't believe it. I knew Thorn was a pretty shady character, but I never figured he'd try to double-cross me.
Robin stepped over to Sandy's side and linked her arm with his.
Well, it's true. So you see, you owe Sandy and Crazy Bear quite a lot. Not just my life, but maybe even your own.
Get away from that.
Crazy Bear straightened to his full height and squared his massive shoulders. Wisely, Gerard stopped before he finished his sentence.
Listen to me, Gerard. This is none of my business, but I reckon you'd be better off if you'd open your eyes and accept what's going on here.
I don't have to accept anything I don't want to.
Is that so? How do you figure to change it? You can't bully or buy off love.
I can kill that young buck.
And if you did, Robin would still love him. She'd just hate you to boot.
I don't like it, and I'm going to do everything in my power to talk you out of it. But I suppose West is right. I can't force you to feel differently than you do.
I'll always love Sandy.
You're picking a mighty tough road to hoe, girl.
It's my decision to make.
Smoke tightened his grip on Seven's reins and led the Appaloosa toward the livery stable. Calhoun came up alongside him.
Where are you headed, West?
The livery stable. I'm going to see to it that this horse of mine gets a good rub down. Plenty of hay and water and a night's rest. I'll be riding out in the morning.
Sure about that?
What do you mean?
Well, I was thinking if I could use a deputy here. The way town's growing and all.
You want me to work for a crook like you?
Maybe I ain't quite as big a crook as you think I am. Maybe I see some things a mite differently now.
I hope you do, Marshal. But it's none of my business. One way or the other, I'm leaving first thing in the morning.
You sound like a man in a hurry to get somewhere.
Maybe I am.
Yeah, you settled the score for me all right, even though it turned out I weren't quite dead after all.
That was before I realized you were too blasted ornery to die.
Smoke peered through the loophole. Lou Torrance and the rest of Bannerman's hired guns had not ventured out of the trees again since their last ill-fated attempt. Obviously, they had decided to be patient and wait for nightfall, which wasn't far off. Already the light outside had begun to fade. Soon it would be dark, and the gunman would be able to approach the cabin without being seen.
What happened to that corrupt Marshal Calhoun? I was in Buffalo Flat less than a year ago, and the town had a different marshal.
Calhoun was killed a few years later in a shootout with some bank robbers. Garrard started a bank of his own in Buffalo Flat, so he wouldn't have to send his money to Casper or Cheyenne. Calhoun had turned into a fairly honest lawman by then, and did his duty. He managed to stop the robbers when they hit the bank, but he was fatally wounded in the process.
You asked me, he was just trying to protect that skunk Garrard's money. Calhoun was sucking up to Garrard right to the end.
Obviously, Garrard never took over the whole town. When I was there, I saw his name on the livery stable and the stage line, but that's all, as far as I can remember.
And the bank. But yeah, after nearly losing his daughter, I reckon he decided some things are more important than money and power. He's still a mighty successful businessman in Buffalo Flat, but there are bigger men in this part of the territory. Reese Bannerman, for one.
Bannerman bided his time and increased his spread and his other holdings till he was the biggest hombre in these parts. But it ain't enough for him, or he wouldn't be after the land the Crows have been claiming for so long.
The problem is, the Crows never claimed it legally.
What the hell's a piece of paper mean to an Indian? I'll tell you what it means, not a damn thing. It's Crow land because they've been living on it and hunting on it for years, and there's nothing some pasty-faced clerk in Washington or Cheyenne can do to change it.
I hate to say it, but that's where you're wrong, Preacher. The way the government works.
Don't you talk to me about the damn government. There's the government's way of doing things, and there's the right way of doing things, and most of the time, those two ain't the same.
Settle down. Matt and I stopped in Denver on the way up here. The governor there is a friend of Matt's, and I have some good lawyers there on retainer.
Last time I checked, Denver was in Colorado, not Wyoming territory. I don't see what good it's going to do to talk to the governor down there.
Politicians usually have some influence over each other. Governor Colorado agreed to write a letter to the territorial governor in Cheyenne, urging him to investigate the situation up here and Bannerman's claim to the land. Smoke's lawyers are coming up here to carry out their own investigation.
Lawyers. Fancy word for crooks, if you ask me.
Sometimes it comes in handy to have the crooks on your side. We'll have to wait and see about that. In the meantime, it's up to us to protect Crazy Bear and his people from Bannerman's hired gunslingers.
Yeah, well, we ain't protecting anybody penned up in this old cabin. It ain't gonna be long before those bastards out there got all the advantage on their side.
Maybe not. There's one thing I reckon they haven't considered.
What's that?
Once it gets dark, we may not be able to see them, but they can't see us either.
What good is that gonna do us? They got a solid ring around us. We can't slip out through them while they're closing in on us.
Ha! You speak for yourself, youngster. Remember now, the Injuns used to call me Ghost Killer. I could sneak right into a village and out again without anybody knowing I was there until it was too late.
No offense, but I'm not sure you're that spry now, Preacher.
Not that spry? You young pup! I'll have you know—
I'm not sneaking out. I'm starting to get another idea, but it'll have to wait until dark. We might as well settle down until then. I don't think they're going to charge us again.
No, neither do I. Smoke said you was in Buffalo Flat a while back. What were you doing in these parts?
Just drifting as usual, seeing what's on the other side of the hill.
Oh, I know that feeling. Been doing the same thing for now on to 60 years.
I'm starting to wonder if this area is jinxed or something. Two of you rode right into trouble when you came through here, and so did I.
Matt hauled back on the reins and brought his big sorrel mount to a halt.
Hear that, Spirit? Sounds like there's a ruckus going on.
Suddenly, a lone rider burst out of some trees about 300 yards ahead of Matt. The man's horse was galloping at full speed with the rider leaning over the animal's neck, urging it on. Seconds later, half a dozen more riders emerged from the trees. Matt glanced to his right. A clump of boulders offered shelter and concealment. He pulled on the reins and heeled Spirit into motion, sending the sorrel into the cluster of big rocks. Matt swung down from the saddle and climbed up a giant slab of rock that was tilted against another boulder. He took off his hat and stretched out on the stony slope, giving him a good view of the chase. The lone rider being pursued was closer. Matt saw that he wore buckskins and was hatless, which was somewhat unusual on the frontier. man's hair was as dark as a raven's wing. The rider swept past, close enough to the rock so Matt could see with a shock that he had made a mistaken assumption. That midnight black hair was twisted into a pair of braids that hung far down the rider's back. The fringed buckskin shirt clung to curves that definitely didn't belong to a man. The rider was a woman. The men who were after her continued blasting away at her as they closed in. Matt got a good look at them as they galloped past the boulders. They had the hard, bitten beard, stubbled features of gunmen rather than regular ranch hands. Maybe they rode for the Circle B, but if they did, they hadn't been hired for their skill at working with cattle. They were killers, plain and simple. The pursuit rushed by so fast, Matt didn't have time to think about what he was doing. Stood up on the steep slope, clapped his hat back on his head, then slid down and pushed off the rock. The leap landed him in the saddle on Spirit's back. A Winchester 44-40 rode snugly in a sheath strapped to the saddle. Matt drew the rifle and worked its lever, jacking around into the chamber. One of the riders ahead of him threw up his arms and slumped forward. The riders hauled back on their reins and brought their mounts to skidding halts that raised some dust. Those who weren't wounded turned their horses and opened fire on Matt.
Come on, Spirit. Let's get back to those rocks.
When he reached the rocks, he dismounted quickly and slapped his hat against Spirit's rump, sending the sorrel deeper into the clump of boulders. Then, carrying the Winchester, he ran back up the slope and slab of rock he had used as a vantage point a few minutes earlier. Throwing himself down on his belly, he thrust the rifle barrel over the top of the rock and lined his sights toward the onrushing gun wolves. Suddenly, the men split up. The swiftness with which they had launched into the tactic told Smoke they were professionals. Although he hated to do it, he shifted his aim and sent a bullet into the chest of one of the horses. The rider was thrown out of the saddle and landed hard, rolling over and over. Matt was ready when the man came to a stop. The gunman had reached cover, three in a grove of trees and two in a gully that zigzagged down to the creek. Those were the ones who worried Matt the most, because they could work their way up that gully where he couldn't get a shot at him until they were behind him. The men in the trees had a pretty good angle on him too. Matt swung his rifle toward the trees, determined to go down fighting. He peered over the barrel as the gunman staggered out from behind a tree in plain sight. Something stuck out from his shoulder, and after a second, Matt realized it was an arrow. Something brown flashed through the trees, moving too fast for Matt to be sure what it was. He'd wager a guess it was a buckskin-clad form. The men in the gully had flanked him. He turned and slid down the slope and face of the rock. He hit the ground at the base of the rock. He had been forced off the high ground. The rocks were little more than a death trap. Responding to the whistle, Spirit came rushing up. Matt grabbed the horn and swung himself into the saddle. Spirit burst out through a gap between the rocks and charged toward the gully. Matt rammed his rifle back into its sheath and drew his Colt. Up, Spirit! The horse launched into a leap that carried him soaring into the air above the gully. The gunman had not been expecting that. They stared up in shock as Matt and the sorrel passed over their heads. Matt pulled back on the reins, slowing and turning the sorrel. He caught sight of both men moving fast back along the gully, heading for the spot where they had left their horses. One was clutching a bullet-shattered arm. The other appeared to be unharmed, but obviously had lost interest in the fight. Matt holstered the revolver and pulled his rifle again. He heeled Spirit into motion and rode in a big circle to the left around the boulders. He wanted to find out what had happened in those trees on the other side of the rocks. Was it possible the woman he had intervened to save had doubled back to save him? As he reached a point where he could see the trees, he spotted three horses and riders on the other side of the creek, moving fast toward the mountains. The horse he had killed still lay where it had fallen, but the man was gone. Either his companions had taken his body with them, or he wasn't dead after all and had managed to grab a ride with one of the others. What mattered was that the echoes of gunshots had faded away, and silence had fallen over the landscape. Would-be killers were gone, and from the looks of the way they had taken off for the Tall and Uncut, they didn't have any intention of coming back anytime soon. That left the woman in buckskins unaccounted for. Matt jogged the sorrel toward the trees, holding the Winchester across the saddle in front of him so that it would be handy if he needed it.
Hello? Are you in there?
At first, there was no response from the timber. Suddenly, a figure stepped out from behind one of the trees about a dozen feet away, and Matt found himself looking at an arrow knocked on a pulled taut bowstring.
Take it easy, ma'am. I'm a friend. I'm the one who helped you back there.
I know what you did. What I don't know is why. And until I do, I'm not going to trust you.
Dark, luminous eyes dominated the lovely face. They had a slightly odd cast that made them look a little different from the eyes of other Indian women he had seen. She was armed with the bow in her hands, a quiver of arrows slung on her back, and a pair of sheathed knives, one on each hip. She wasn't pointing the arrow directly at him anymore, but the wariness in her eyes and the tenseness in her stance told Matt that she could raise that bow and let fly in the blink of an eye.
I don't have any interest in hurting you, ma'am. I saw those men chasing you and shooting at you, and I stepped in to stop them.
Why? Why would you risk your life to help a stranger?
Well, you're a woman, for one thing, and I reckon I'd have taken a hand even if you were a man. I never did like 6-to-1 odds. They don't hardly seem fair.
Fair? You helped me because my plight offended your sense of fairness?
You could put it like that.
Who are you?
Name's Matt Jensen.
Jensen? What are you doing in this valley, Matt Jensen?
Just riding. I've been up in Montana territory and thought I'd drift south for a while, before the colder weather moves in. Is there a settlement in these parts? Probably wouldn't hurt if I picked up some supplies.
Buffalo Flat is about 10 miles south of here. You should be careful, though. Reese Bannerman doesn't like strangers riding across his range.
Bannerman, huh? As in the Circle B?
Yes, that's his ranch.
We're on his range now?
He runs cattle on this land. That does not mean he owns it.
I see. I've told you my name, but you haven't told me yours. What do they call you?
Starwind.
Starwind. It suits you. You're a crow?
That's right. My father's village is near here. You've said nothing about my clothes.
I reckon folks have a right to dress however they want.
Or the fact that I fight like a man.
Well, that came in mighty handy when you ventilated one of those fellows with an arrow.
Two of them.
I thought I heard somebody else yell in those trees. If you hadn't turned around and come back to help me, there's a good chance they'd have kept me pinned down in those rocks until a ricochet got me. So I owe you just as much as you owe me.
We are square, as the white man says.
Yep, we're square. I'm curious, though. Why were those varmints chasing you? They work for this fellow Bannerman?
I don't know. I was searching for something, and they saw me and began shooting at me. If my pony was not so swift, they would have killed or captured me.
What were you looking for?
She didn't answer. Instead, she finally unknocked the arrow and slid it back into the quiver slung over her shoulder.
Will you come with me to the village of my people, Matt Jensen?
Sure, I can do that. I appreciate the invitation.
Follow me then.
The paint pony she'd been riding earlier came out of the trees. She vaulted lively onto its back. Matt let her lead the way. Starwind headed west, the course winding through the lush valley between the rugged, heavily timbered mountains. A few minutes later, Matt spotted a tendril of gray smoke twisting upward into the blue sky.
My father's village.
When they reached the village, Matt saw that the lodges were scattered along a plain beside the creek, with woods nearby for firewood. It was a good-sized village, housing probably a couple hundred people, he estimated, as he and Starwind approached. An air of tension definitely hung over the entire village. Some of the women and children looked frightened. Something had happened that had everybody spooked. Matt spotted someone striding forward behind a line of warriors. The man was easy to see. because he stood head and shoulders above the rest. The line parted to let him through. Matt's jaw tightened as he got his first good look at the tall, broad-shouldered Indian. The man's face was scarred and misshapen, and yet it bore a powerful dignity that slightly lessened the impact of his ugliness. His dark hair was heavily streaked with gray, but that was the only real indication of his age. The lines left by the years didn't show on his ravaged face, and his body seemed as powerful and vital as that of any younger man. He had to be the chief of the band. The way he carried himself, he could be nothing less.
Starwind! I fear that you had disappeared too. Who is this?
Starwind slid down from the back of her pony.
He says his name is Matt Jensen.
Jensen? You share the same blood as the one called Smoke Jensen?
Not exactly. He's my adopted brother. Or I reckon I should say he adopted me, since he saved my life, took me in, and pretty much raised me into a man. I took his name when I went out on my own, in tribute to him.
Not blood, but blood brothers then.
That's the way I feel about it.
I am Crazy Bear. Years ago, Smoke Jensen did a great kindness for my family, and I have never forgotten him. Come, you are welcome here.
Matt relaxed, as did the warriors who were lined up behind Chief Crazy Bear. Matt dismounted.
I will see to it that your horse is cared for.
Thanks. His name is Spirit.
Crazy Bear ushered Matt toward one of the lodges.
You will be my guest. Has Smoke spoken of his time here?
Not that I recall. It might have been after he and I went our separate ways.
He called himself Buck West then. I learned his true name later.
Yeah, that was after we split up, after his first wife was killed. I heard about it from him later on, but I wasn't around when it happened. I'd like to think things might have been different if I had been.
An older woman waited in front of the lodge that was Crazy Bear's destination. She had gray in her hair too, but she was still very attractive. Something had upset her. Matt saw pain and worry in her dark eyes.
I thought there might be news of Moonfawn.
No, but our daughter has come home. This man was with her. His name is Matt Jensen, blood brother to Smoke.
The woman came closer, and Matt realized that she wasn't an Indian. He had taken her for one at first because of her coloring and her buckskin dress. Her features had a distinctly European look, and he knew that that was what he had noticed about Starwind without really understanding it. The young woman was a mixture of the two cultures.
My name is Mala.
I'm pleased to meet you, ma'am. Just wish it was under better circumstances.
What do you know of the circumstances?
Nothing, really. Only that your daughter was being chased by gunmen because they caught her looking for someone else who had disappeared. Someone named Moonfawn.
Starwind was in danger?
I stepped in to help her. And then she helped me when those hard cases turned around and came after me. I guess you could say we got each other out of trouble.
Starwind, where did you go?
The young woman walked up, having cared for her pony and Matt's sorrel.
I went to look for my niece. Someone has to find her before it's too late.
We have searched from one end of the valley to the other.
Not Bannerman's line camps or the headquarters of his ranch.
The truce between us is too easy to break. If we go near the line camps or Bannerman's house, there will be trouble.
Why should we worry about trouble with Bannerman and his men when Moonfawn is missing?
You think I care about Bannerman when my granddaughter is gone? But your father is right. The peace is a fragile one, and Bannerman has no reason to be interested in Moonfawn.
He runs his cattle on land that has always been our hunting ground. He cannot be trusted.
I do not trust him, but one little Indian girl means nothing to him.
Mala moved between Crazy Bear and Starwind.
My apologies, Mr. Jensen. All this means nothing to you. The most important thing right now is that we owe you our gratitude for the help you gave our daughter. Please accept our hospitality. We can feed you well and give you a good place to spend the night before you ride on to wherever it is you're going.
I appreciate that, ma'am, and I'll sure accept your kind invitation, but only on one condition.
What condition is that?
That you tell me everything you can about what's going on here. See, I'd like to help you get your granddaughter back safe and sound if I can.
It is to be expected that the blood brother of Smoke Jensen would make such an offer. Come into my lodge, Matt Jensen. We will smoke a pipe, and my wife will prepare a meal.
I accept your hospitality, Crazy Bear.